Michael Hansen is in the studio with me tonight. He is a multi-talented man. His book, The Way the World Is, The Maggie Boylan Stories, won the 2014 Bright Horse Prize in Short Fiction. He's published four books of fiction, including A Small Room with Trouble on My Mind, which was recently released in a new revised edition. He also has four collections of poetry, and he plays guitar and mandolin with the Old Coney Bluegrass Band and with the roots duo Carter Bridge. He's co-editor of Pine Mountain Sand and Gravel, the annual publication of the Southern Appalachian Writers Cooperative. Tonight, we're going to hear from his new chapbook that will be published as a larger collection of Michael's poems in The Dead Singing, coming out this fall. Michael, I'm always delighted to be with you. Thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
We're actually in the season that you have a beautiful poem about. It's titled Autumn. Would you read that for us, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Autumn. We are startled into the season. Acorns snap against the roof. Walnuts thump the ground. The paths crackle with copperhead leaves. Everywhere, things hurry toward completion. Pumpkins thicken in the garden and potatoes in their dens. The last of the apples gather sweetness. The deer and possum fatten desperately against what is to come. The purple mosses of the thistles lose heart altogether. The green sap falls. The lances darken. The tendrils stiffen into frozen arabesques. A boy with a stick will shatter them into a cloud of silver splinters, leaf meal, spines, dust, seed.
Thank you. Amazing how one word changes everything. That last word, seed, holds so much promise when I hear you read it. And I'm thinking how that then influences our whole perception of the poem, but I'm also thinking beyond that to another poem that's in your book, which is in honor of James Wright. And I'm interested for you to tell us who he was, for people who don't know, and how he, in fact, influenced your writing.
James Wright was a poet who was born in Ohio, born on along the Ohio River in the Appalachian area of Ohio. He was a contemporary of Robert Bly, or a fellow of Robert Bly and others of his ilk, and a fantastically original poet who wrote very movingly of the natural world, but also of the various intersections of humanity with the natural world in a kind of tragic way that I find very, very powerful. So I learned a lot from reading James Wright.
And this is a very powerful poem that you have dedicated to him. So if you would read us homage to James Wright.
Sure. Miss, climb the valley walls, ghosts of the horrors of wheeling. They twine among the stacks of the rusting mills like tendrils of a vine. From the bridge, the river is smooth as green glass. Below, the long knives of the gar track the schools of shad. The slender shadows of the caddis shed their clay cases, rise and join the larger shadows of the darkling swallows. In the mucky bottoms, drowned men stir. They startle the drowsing catfish. Their wives, their white-breasted wives, wait for them in the star-clustered branches of the sycamores.
Thank you. This poem has such vivid images, beautiful images, telling images. And I'm curious where that sort of embryonic moment is that a poem begins to you. Is it with a visual or a phrase or something someone says, or in this case, sounds very much in keeping with how James Wright himself wrote poetry.
This poem in particular came from an image. I was crossing the Ohio River in the area where that James Wright was from, and it was just about sundown, darkling time. I was traveling east and carried that image of the river with me as I traveled, and when I got to a stopping place, I began to pile up the images that completed the poem. So it started, I guess, from an image kind of linked to a feeling of kind of that sadness that I pick up when I read James Wright.
And so Do you have a daily writing process, or in this case, you're talking about, it sounds to me more in the moment where the images start piling up and you literally pull over beside the road or whatever and start the first iterations of a poem.
Well, I never really had the privilege of what some writers call a writing life, where you can block out a consistent set of hours per day. I often have counted my writing time in minutes. I've always had jobs, kids, and other commitments. And so I learned to just make that dive into that groove when I could have the chance. And so I'm in that situation now. I'm retired from the job life. And so I find myself doing the job that I believe I was meant to do. So I have more regular life now as a writer than I've ever had, but mostly it's been carving out time when I could find it. Lunch hours, before work, after work, sometimes during work, during a boring meeting, just whenever I could find that right. time.
I would like to ask you to read another poem. And this one, it's called History of the World, kind of sums up in many ways, certainly what we see or hear in the media every day.
I'd be happy to read that.
Thank you.
The History of the World. Sacrifice and betrayal. It's the whole story. Red flags go out. Palm branches are thrown down. Hope lifts. The heart swells. Brother looks at brother. Sister looks at sister with a clear, unfettered eye. Out of the mangers of the earth spill wheat and martyrs. Then the legionnaires step up. Tanks roll. Dollars go on the march. The great red eye of television fills up with victims.
Thank you. In your own life, do you have an antidote to this? Is poetry an antidote?
Well, I used the phrase, the duty of hope, in my first book of poems. I talked about a march we had in honor of a martyr, Buddy Gray, into Washington Park, which is just a block or two over from here. And I speak there of my son, who was very small at the time. He's grown now, but he was very small at the time, and that I owed to him the duty of hope. And so I try to be as honest as I can about all the bleak things that are going on in the world, but to look for that little grain of hope that is there. People have talked about my stuff as being dark. Somebody once asked me if I ever write a cheerful poem, and I said, well, no, I don't think so. And I don't think they're hopeless. I look for hope. I just want it to be realistic.
Well, I want to thank you for visiting with us tonight, certainly sharing your wonderful poetry, but I appreciate very much the gift of the duty of hope. What a wonderful thing to take away with us from talking with you, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Michael Henson, and we've heard poems from his latest chapbook to be published as a regular collection this fall, In the Dead Singing. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.